Hello, innovators, explorers, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. And on today's episode, I am interviewing Raghu Yarlagada. He is the founder and CEO of Falcon X. Raghu's journey is nothing short of inspirational. From his pivotal role in scaling Google's Chromebooks to a staggering $3 billion in revenue benchmark to crafting the success story of Falcon X, where he has raised over $470 million for his startup. And you know, as they say, that building a startup is extremely hard, but what is harder is building a startup in crypto world and especially taking it to this scale. So today he is going to share about how he did it. How and why is Falcon X so successful? He also shares with us what they are building, which lies at the cross section of Web3, artificial intelligence, and finance, and how they are solving real world problems. So if the tremors of the crypto winter have left you anxious, then this episode will offer you solace, guidance, and a renewed perspective on why you still need to be bullish about Web3 and why the future is still bright for Web3. So whether you are an entrepreneur building a product in this space, a crypto enthusiast, or just someone seeking clarity in the complex world of digital finance, then Raghu's insights provide a beacon of hope and direction. Nothing mentioned in this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Moreover, I do not run ads on this podcast. My only ask is that you leave a review and share this episode with a friend. With all that out of the way, let's get into it. Welcome to the show, and I've been waiting and looking forward to talking with you even at Collision, and I have been following Falcon. Falcon X has been in news. It seems like you have Falcon X. I know some other entrepreneur who likes that letter as well recently. But yeah, welcome to the show. Let's get into it. For some of our listeners who might not be aware about Falcon X, how would you describe Falcon X to them?
Sure thing. The first off, thanks so much for having me, Sam. I'm really excited to be here. So in terms of Falcon X, we are one of the largest institutional-only digital asset brokers. As a digital asset brokerage, we do three things for our clients: trading, credit, and clearing. So in terms of trading, you could see one of the world's largest hedge funds coming and saying that I want to buy $200 million worth of Bitcoin. It's not like you can go to an exchange and then clean up the order book. It is far more complex in terms of addressing the institutional trading needs, whether it's high-frequency systematic trading or buying large lots of digital assets, buying or selling them. So that's trading. Now, the second part is the financing. Mostly, it's short-term lending and borrowing that's required to facilitate these trades. And the third part is clearing, which is like safely storing digital assets and also settling and clearing. Because we know billions of dollars of volume on a daily basis. So a lot of our customers settle with us in multiple tranches and they don't have to pre-fund with us. So that's what Falcon X does at a very high level. And in terms of the reasons why customers come to us is usually for three, four, Sam. The first one is discretion. Like when the world's largest venture capital fund is looking at expressing a position in crypto, they want to be very discreet. They want to make sure that they're minimizing the market impact. So discretion is one reason. Reliability is another reason. And it's like banking failures and exchange failures and hedge fund failures. You've been up and running, and that reliability is extremely important for institutional customers. The last but not the least is the scale, right? Like billions of dollars in trading volume on a daily basis gives you the ability to go deep into liquidity and things like that. So those are the important reasons why customers come to us.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. I have so many questions. So first, let's look at how you talk a bit about privacy, that large, like a VC fund or institutions might want that privacy, which people don't realize, like blockchain is our public and everyone can see everything that's going on. So do you guys use something like zero knowledge proofs or something like that to provide that privacy, or do you have other mechanisms or other tech that you use?
Yeah. So it's a two-part answer, Sam. I think the first part, why is privacy important? The other aspect of privacy, which a lot of customers care about, is you want to minimize the impact in the market. If you are buying or selling $10 million of Bitcoin, the liquidity in Bitcoin is so large that it's not going to move markets. But in smaller altcoins, if you want to buy 10, 20, or 30, or sell 10, 20, or 30, the market moves a crazy amount. That creates a lot of slippage and some unwanted effects. So those are the kind of things that institutions are sensitive about. Now, how do we manage that? We are connected both into the centralized liquidity pools and in some jurisdictions, the decentralized liquidity pools. For example, if Sam, the hedge fund, wants to express a view of buying $100 million in Bitcoin, we aggregate liquidity from all the major exchanges and also the dark pools. Now, once we execute the transaction, the settlement is recorded on the chain through Falconix, but not through the customer. Through Falconix, the settlement is recorded on the chain, but the actual trading happens on the centralized exchanges. And we do, in some jurisdictions on an experimental basis, tap into the decentralized liquidity, but that's not as big a portion of how we route trades as of today. We are looking into zero knowledge, primarily for some of the applications where with hedge funds, if we want to make sure that they want to be anonymous, even when settling with Falconix, we are looking at the zero knowledge topologies right now, but that's in the very early phases, Sam.
It is. It's very early days for zero knowledge. So how did you get started with Falconix? What's your story? Like, how did you come up with that idea and all that, or fall into it?
Sure. I started my career as an engineer, Sam. My first master's degree, I specialized in image processing and machine learning. After that, I got Devil advice. The Devil advice was engineers must go to business school. I fell for it. But I was very fortunate to have gone to Harvard Business School. Right after HBS, I was at Google working on Chrome operating system. Specifically, I was responsible at scaling Chromebooks in US schools. And that was very exciting. During the time at Google, some of the brightest engineers that I know at Google and also Facebook, including the ones who worked with Larry and Sergey in the very early days of Google, some of these engineers are not shutting up about blockchain. They are so excited. They were so gung-ho. And for me, I'm like, yes, I did explore cryptocurrencies before, but I was not enamored just yet. I was like, what am I missing? Why are some of the world's brightest engineers so excited about blockchain? So I started having conversations, started doing projects with them. And what I realized is the big insight walking out of that experience is I believe that a lot of world's value will be tokenized in the next 5 to 10 years. Now you see reports like BCG mentioning that by 2030, it's going to be $60 trillion. That's the exciting part. I think crypto is just the first use case of tokenization, not the only use case, I'm guessing.
Yes.
So with that perspective, if most of the world's value is tokenized, is going to be tokenized, I wanted to bring a company that's in the short-term central set. And that's how the idea for Falconix started.
Amazing. Amazing. That sounds so true that I had the same thing. The reason why I got interested in blockchain is because all the developer friends cannot stop talking about it. And when you see the exodus of the brightest minds to an industry, you shouldn't wait. You should run and jump into it. That's what I believe as well. So that's why I'm still here, despite the, doesn't matter if it's a bull market, bear market, crypto venture, all that stuff. So yeah, I would love to know a bit more about how did Falconix become this successful? What do you think are the few key things that you did that, because there are like thousands of crypto projects, very few reach the level that yours has reached.
Yeah, first off, thank you. We've been very fortunate, Sam. So I'll break that into two parts. One is as a crypto founder, I think it's crypto founder requires 5 times more credit than probably a traditional founder. But the risk group is amazing with them. Yes. So I'll talk about that in just a second, but starting with what was helpful in building Falconix. I think one of the most powerful things that helped the company grow and scale is the customer centricity and the focus on the customer need. So we started with one very simple application, Sam. In 2017 or 2018, when you went to investors and tell them that you're building something for institutions, they're like, in 2018, institutions weren't there in crypto. It was some of the VCs, some of my good friends in the venture world. Are you building an attack company for 2-3 institutions that are there in all of crypto? Was the running joke at that time. But our conviction was, as any asset class becomes mainstream, 60 to 70% of the activity is usually on the institutional side. So yeah, we expect institutions to come. Now, with that conviction, we went and spoke with those institutions that were there in that space. Biggest problem they were running into is, if I want to buy $1 million of any digital asset, any crypto, yes, the amount of fake volume that you deal with exchanges in those days was so large that you think you're buying $1 million worth of Bitcoin for price X, but you're slipping so much from the intended price because of fake volume and all the shenanigans on the exchanges. Yes. So that was a big problem. So Falconix started solving that one problem. For an institution, how do you enable them to buy and sell digital assets at scale without dealing with the nuance of slippage? And that's where we used a lot of machine learning. And once we solved that problem, like creating business started spiking up very fast. Then we started expanding the number of use cases in trading, principal style trading, agency style trading. And then we started wrapping other use cases like credit, which were what our customers kept telling. To get to the heart of the question, what led to the confidence such as in Falconix, I think deeply understanding the use case and customer need was one of the most powerful things.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I'm like, one of the reasons that attracted me to crypto and Web3 and all that is I am really interested in the in how money got developed and how money mm-hmm. is used around the world. And every time there is an innovation, whether it's in form of credit or money or transactions or anything, it completely changes the whole world, completely increases the size of the whole pie mm-hmm. for everyone. So it's just whether it was the first stock exchange in Amsterdam and the first publicly traded company, the East India Company, or whatever, mm-hmm. like whenever something happens and how many companies are born because of the and sustained because of the public markets around the world. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I feel like it is an innovation at that or a bigger level that mm-hmm. That what you were saying, that in 5 or 10 years time, the tokenization will enable and all that. And so, yeah, would love to understand, like, so how does Falconix solve the credit side of things?
Yeah, absolutely. As I get into credit, Sam, I also want to touch on something on the former part of that statement, right? Which is like localization in 5 to 10 years. And if money transforms, that transforms economies, that transforms lives.
Yeah, so exactly right.
One example on how that's already happening, and this was completely an accidental use case for Falconix. A meaningful portion of our revenue today is coming from cross-border B2B payments. Yeah. Why? We are a digital asset crypto company. How come we're in cross-border B2B payments? So what we realized is some of our customers who sell other businesses, what they figured out is instead of if you were to move $1 million US dollars into pound or £1 million into US dollars, you need to go through 12 intermediary banks to actually physically the money first, complete the transaction of actually the cost of transaction, and then you move the money through 12 intermediary banks in 2 days. Now, what we're helping some of our customers do is you can collapse the dollar into a crypto rail that is very efficient, and you can unpack that crypto again to the local currency, and all of that transaction is being completely settled, created, settled and cleared in a matter of 3 hours. So you're now able to move $1 million worth of US dollar or pound and vice versa in a matter of 3 hours versus 2 days and hopping through 12 intermediary banks.
Yeah.
So I think money is fundamentally getting transformed, right? Yes. The minute you tokenize an asset, you can truly operationalize this asset 24/7 and globally and elastically. Yes. And as a result, things like use cases like cross-border B2B payments are getting so much more efficient, and that's happening today. So yeah. I'm excited where we're going to go in the next 5 years, but that, your first statement reminded me of that.
Oh, that is 100% correct. And I can see that. Just like how commodities are traded, they are mm-hmm. not, someone is, potatoes are traded, onions are traded as in commodity mm-hmm. markets and stuff. No one is physically moving those products from one mm-hmm. trader to, no one's moving 100 tons of potato from one trader's house to another trader's house. We are just trading mm-hmm. the representation of that commodity or value in on the markets. And so it just, yeah. it makes complete sense that this is the natural progression of how mm-hmm. things will go with fractionalizing an asset. And even right now, to buy a property or to do something, it is so time consuming, and there's lawyers involved, and there's so much processes involved, and there's so much transaction fees that is involved. There is no reason why it cannot be done in 2 hours or in an hour or 3 hours, as you said.
Yeah.
But then I have talked to some founders who are building things in this space, even in like in the last 2 years. Why has it taken so long? Why haven't been able to do this, fractionalize other digital assets as well? Oh, not only digital, other physical assets as well. And and trade them on an kind of an open market so anyone can buy. So it's like my house, I can $1 million, I can divide it into $1 million coins and then sell it to whoever wants it or whatever and float it in a market. What's the hold up or the challenge here?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, Sam. So a couple of facets to it. The first thing, when we started Falcon in 2018, at that point, only $1 billion or $2 billion worth of US dollar was tokenized in the form of stable coins, whether it's in Tether or something else. Today, it's $125 billion. In a matter of 4.5 years, literally, I mean, you 100x'd the tokenization of US dollar. So why? There was a very compelling use case. The compelling use case of why the dollar got tokenized incredibly fast. When I see this with customers on a day-in and day-out basis. What happens is customers come in, a lot of financial institutions, and even retail users, right?
Yes.
The biggest thing, the biggest aspiration for them is if you have $100 of balance sheet, and if you're a systematic trader, how quickly you rinse and repeat that balance sheet is the most important measurement to how much a profit you can earn. The more you turn over your balance sheet, the better it is in systematic strategies. But most of your trading, like in equity trading, if you look at it, the trading hours are only 20% of like the 24/7 time in the week.
Yes.
Literally, the market's only worth 20%. Now, if you take extended hours, they work 40% of the time. Literally, most of the world's money, but most of the world's assets are actually sitting idle for the rest of the time. Mm. If you're a systematic trader who is focused on balance sheet efficiency, your money is actually sitting idle at least 60% of the time. So then what these traders thought is, yeah, crypto is a 24/7 market. I can put my balance sheet to use more effectively. But guess what? Banks are not working on the nights and weekends. So stablecoins were very important. And that was the core use case which your stablecoin grew. So they went from $2 billion to $120 million, $125 million as of today. Now, while that is happening, Franklin Templeton and BlackRock's of the world, they think about tokenizing money market funds. And essentially, the use case that they're going after is not just giving access to money market funds that are a powerful instrument here in the US, but now by tokenization, these become global assets.
Yes, 100%.
So in summary, what I'm saying is tokenization is a tool. But a use case that takes advantage of this tool gives you radical growth. We've seen that growth in stable coins. We will see those growth in money market funds getting tokenized. And slowly we'll start expanding to other asset classes. One of the bigger bottlenecks, Sam, was also regulation.
Yes.
But everything that's happening in regulation right now looks a little painful in terms of what's happening with SEC, Coinbase, and Binance. But what that's going to translate to in a year or two is the world will have regulatory clarity in terms of what is a security, what's a commodity, who regulates it, and how these things need to be handled. And once the clarity emerges, I think markets can form around it very fast. So I think that could be an unlock towards tokenization as well.
Yeah. And this is something that I always tell people is that the things in the crypto world move 5x faster or in the Web3 world move 5x faster than because it doesn't sleep. It's like the markets are open, as you said, only 20% of the time. Whereas this is, so the velocity is so much faster. And with the whole ethos of decentralization, it is more open to things like remote and having a distributed team. And once you have distributed team around the world, Stripe is only available in 75 countries. It's not even in 190. So what do you do to pay the rest of your staff in other places outside of that, the remaining 120 countries and stuff? And you use stable coins because everyone has clarity that I worked for this week, I'll still get paid $500. So I won't have to, I won't be paid in a random coin, which will be worth $50 or $5,000. So there is stability. Everyone has stability. Stability is so good for commerce. You need stability. Without stability, no one's trading. Every asset is as bad as inflationary asset because no one spends a deflationary thing because it will be worth more in future. So stablecoin solved all those problems in one shot. And even as you said, retail users are using it. And the real unbanked, or when people used to think that unbanked, used to think of this random farmer in somewhere in Africa and who doesn't have access to bank, there's no bank in 200 mile radius or something like that. But it's not. It was the real unbanked was the 14 to 19 year old anywhere in a developing country like Asia or as in Philippines or Vietnam, or and they didn't have a bank account because most, even in US, they don't have a bank account. A lot of 14, 15 year olds, but they have a digital, like a DeFi wallet. They were gaming. They made their first money from digital asset, whether it's through trading or playing a game or something. And now even they have access to a stable coin and they can go and invest their first money that they made themselves. So it's amazing. And those were the real, that's why there's 100 million wallets, gamers and stuff. That's because they were the real unbanked, that crypto banked. And this is their first, and this is, so they are native to cryptos. They are more likely to, in the 10 years time when they are earning, they would already be experienced in all those things. So I do think we are on that trajectory.
Yeah,
I would love to understand a bit of the aspect of market making. What does market making or a market maker mean in the crypto and DeFi world?
Absolutely. One of the most important components of blockchain is the token itself, because token is almost like the blood that revitalizes the entire blockchain. It helps align incentives between the people who are using the chain and who are producing, who are using and who are consuming the chain. So because token is a very integral part of the blockchain, as a project is thinking about sufficiently decentralizing it, getting their token in the hands of many people to facilitate the utility which is powered by the blockchain, they also need to think about, how do I get the token in the hands of all these different people? And when these different people want to convert this token from this token into Bitcoin or Bitcoin into this token, they need to have a vibrant market to facilitate the interchange of these tokens into other assets. To break that apart, token is the lifeblood of the blockchain. And if a project is building this token or a blockchain and launching their utility on top of it, they need that token to be interchangeable with every other digital asset.
Yes.
The more interchangeable it is, the more people can actually buy and sell those tokens, get in and out of that decentralized ecosystem.
Yes.
Now, what is market making? If you just launch that token in the secondary markets without having a designated market maker, what happens is if everyone continues to sell the token and there is no one who is buying the token, then there is a huge price asymmetry. And let alone, if you want to sell, they might not be a buyer. The converse could also happen. If everyone is buying a token and there's no one to sell, the market freezes up. And that creates a poor customer experience. Mm-hmm. So essentially, the function of a good market maker is to step in and provide that liquidity so that there is liquidity on both sides, so that the user will have a great experience either buying or selling.
Yes.
So the function of a market maker is to provide liquidity so that your lifeline of the blockchain, the token, has sufficient liquidity to make sure that it exchanges into any other form that the user wants. So that is market making at a very high level. I abstracted a lot of concepts, but in a high level.
Oh, no, that is good. That is very easy to understand. And then, so the people who do launch a token on their own, they are required to add that liquidity. And often that happens is that if token goes beyond a certain size, they cannot maintain that liquidity. And then the project collapses, or it's not a pleasant situation for the whole market, gives crypto the bad name. So does it provide like a sort of branding or like consumer confidence on that token if it has a strong market maker?
Yeah. So when you're considering a market maker for a project, there are three important aspects to construction. The first and foremost, which venues do we want to provide that liquidity at the depth of liquidity? because no market maker in the world can provide liquidity across all the pairs, across all the venues on the planet. Yeah. So it's very important to figure out for your use case and your user base, which venues and what type of liquidity is needed. And that's what a good market maker will work with you and provide facilitating. That's number one. Number two, a good market maker also works really well anticipating, you know, the highs and the lows of the demands, right? For example, if you're making a big launch on your project, it's important to work with the market maker so that you have sufficient liquidity to facilitate these transactions. So a good market maker works hand in hand with the demands of how the project is performing. So that's number two. That responsive collaborative relationship is what you need to look for. And number three, a good market maker also gives a lot of market signal. For example, what we realize is for this particular token, even before the project realizes, we realize that in Thailand, during these hours, there is a lot more demand for your token than what we all expected. Did you actually understand? So a good market maker, number three, also facilitates those insights in terms of who's using the token, how they are buying and selling it, so that you can plan around the use case and the utility of the blockchain.
Oh, fantastic. And that brings me to the question, do you use machine learning and AI or those sort of things to understand that level of data?
Yeah. So at Falconex, one of the first use cases that we saw is like, how do you actually facilitate a great price to the customer? So we sit on top, as a broker, we sit on top of all these exchanges, dark pools. Now, once we sit on top of these exchanges, we need to figure out what is real and what is fake volume. What is reliable liquidity, what's unreliable liquidity at different volatility conditions. So I have a background in machine learning. So we use a lot of machine learning to perfect. And that gave Falconex a tremendous differentiation at the start. Which I think the broader point there is, crypto is really an incubation hub for the future of finance. Whether it's the 24/7 side of it, crypto tends to incubate a lot of financial technologies. The one intersection that I'm really excited about, the intersection of AI and finance, I thought was a lot of speculation 1 year back when I saw a lot of hype around AI. But having built a lot of appliances at the intersection of AI and finance, I think it's a very exciting intersection. What I mean by that is, I think we are starting off a new arms race in finance where people will clamor to have the best AI on their side. Yeah. Now, it's very difficult if you're a fund or a retail creator to compete with someone who's using AI as a part of their financial strategies. Yeah. So a lot of that intersection of finance and AI will be tested in crypto. And the more I see, like in our internal tools, and I'm happy to talk about the specific use cases if you or your users are interested. But the early results are looking very compelling.
Oh, yeah. I would love to learn about at least one use case.
Yeah. So what are the use cases that I myself was very surprised? So we have currently in alpha with the generative AI platform called Satoshi through Falconex. Satoshi is a multi-LLM platform. So essentially it's built on top of OpenAI, Google, Anthropic, and a few other LLMs. On top of these LLMs, this platform is specifically curated for the financial use case and it's enterprise grade. Now, what this platform is being used for, I'll give you one use case, which is surprising to us. Crypto is a 24/7 market. So the news cycle is incredibly difficult to keep up with. As a trader, you wake up to 8,000 tweets plus articles on a daily basis. It's very difficult for a human to comprehend all of this news inputs to make the right trading decisions. So what's possible with Satoshi is, and this is all working in real time, it's not just a visual use case. Satoshi is able to filter news for Sam. Once you come to Satoshi and hit the button, summarize what's happening in the markets, it knows your portfolio, it knows your trading patterns, it knows your previous interests. So it scouts all of the news articles, summarizes all the news that's relevant to you in a matter of 2 minutes and 5 minutes. And that's only the first step. Once you have the summary, I think what you've seen to be very powerful is, now Sam can say, yeah, this is an interesting news summary. Give me a bunch of trading strategies from this summer. So Satoshi can generate 3, 4, 5 trading strategies that are customized for you based on your previous patterns and interests. Yeah. And then, even better, you can say, you know what? I think trading strategy 2 is, I don't buy it. But trading strategy 3 and 4 are really interesting. Why don't actually backtest strategy number 3 and 4 with historical Ethereum data over the last 3 months and tell me? Like Jarvis and Iron Man, it can model the entire back test for you. In 3 to 5 minutes, it can get back to you saying that, Sam, if you were to deploy, if you had deployed strategy number 3 months back, this is the P&L and this is the Sharpe ratio for that strategy. All you need to say is, yeah, I like this, move $500 from Falcon's wallet A to wallet B and start executing and defining the parameters. This entire process of prototyping the trading idea in your strategy and executing trades used to take 45 days before. Now I'm seeing people do that in 1 or 2 hours using some of the advances in AI.
Absolutely, absolutely. As you were talking, I could visualize Jensen Huang from NVIDIA. What we are talking about, he'll be like, okay, let's go. Switch on the production. Bring 2 million more GPUs. I can see this. No, definitely. Look, I have been talking to lots of people in the generative AI space, and this is something that is coming back consistently, that it is transforming every industry that it is touching. I don't know if you saw in the last 2 days, the number of visits to Stack Overflow, and it's now 30% of what it was 8-9 months ago or 10 months ago. It is crazy. So people are going more and getting the answer that they want. That's curated for them. That's made for them. And the same thing is happening. Mm-hmm. There are pretty much every single company is integrating AI into their platform. I know one or two other trading platforms trying to do something similar, not as advanced as how you describe Satoshi on FalconX, but something similar that you can look at your existing portfolio and say that how would Warren Buffett invest? Like, this is the stocks in the regular, like the Web2 world, that how would Warren Buffett invest, reinvest my portfolio, or what would changes he would make, or similar, like you can ask it from the name of the person, like a public person who has a public fund, like a Berkshire Hathaway or whatever it might be, or Cathie Wood would do to my portfolio. So those sort of things are definitely going to come, and it's going to be in every product that you will talk to AI. I have one question is that, don't you get in trouble with like that? Isn't it going into the territory of financial advisor that you have to be when it's a human, it has to be a certified fiduciary or a financial advisor who has the interest of the client and not the interest of the asset, trading asset or something. So does that, I don't know, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Sam. Two points on that. First and foremost, Satoshi will co-build things with you. It won't unilaterally make decisions for you. It'll co-build. Sam, here are all the different strategies to consider. What do you want me to do? So that collaborative approach, what we're finding is it actually evokes more trust in a customer because it's a completely neutral system. And this neutral system is taking your command and executing what you'd like to do and co-building and co-working with you. It's almost like a co-pilot that's being personalized for you. So that's one aspect of it. The second aspect of it, that's the reason why we are still in alpha. We want to actually see these patterns very carefully, right? Before the difficult thing there is the waitlist is expanding and there's a lot of waitlist. But we want to make sure that the trust and safety is very well orchestrated before we expand. So we are evaluating that very carefully in terms of how to actually expand the number of users on the platform after evaluating these use cases.
That sounds really good. I have another question, and that is around, what is your contrarian view when you look at the whole crypto markets and or just the whole crypto industry and stuff?
Yeah. So I'm not sure if this is as contrarian, but in the next 1 or 2 years, Sam, if you look at it, with everything that's happening with the US regulation, I think we'll have really good regulatory clarity that's going to emerge out. So that's a good thing. Now, the centralized infrastructure, having gone through all the ups and downs of last year in terms of some of the largest exchanges failing, liquidity pools collapsing, the credit market collapsing, the centralized infrastructure, whoever is left standing, they are much more resilient than what they are. So that's also a good thing. The decentralized infrastructure is getting better because of layer twos, which you covered in a couple of episodes before. That's also getting better.
Yes.
Security, nation states are now attacking crypto companies. But the good news is crypto companies are behind closed doors. They're collaborating tremendously with each other. So security is also getting better. But the one thing that is a very important condition, and we as an industry that needs to focus on this, is the use cases. Crypto and tokenization is a tool. A tool is useless without an amazing use case around it. Yes. The use cases that we see in the cross-border B2B payments, whether it's the second use case that we see is a global asset class. Now, sure, people in Southeast Asia, what some of our customers tell us, this is the only global asset that they have access to, Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And so while these two use cases are compelling, we need more concrete use cases for this asset class and tokenization to grow. And as an industry, we should be laser focused on use cases because everything else is aligning. Regulation, infrastructure, scalability, security. Yes. But all of these things are necessary conditions, but not sufficient. The sufficiency condition is use cases, and we need to be focused there.
Yeah. And that is something that I have been researching personally and finding that use case. One use case I find is that store of value, incredible store of value to like in form of Bitcoin or a few other assets. Another one is transfer of value in form of stable coins. Incredible transfer of value, as you say, whether it's B2B or B2C, paying employees around the world, all that stuff, paying friends, because not everyone has access to US dollars. 95% of the world doesn't have that easy access and stuff. Incredible. Mm-hmm. But then there is a huge gap in the middle that the normal people, the only thing that they have, not only thing, the main thing that they have, how they have interacted with crypto is in the form of trading, speculation, gaming, gambling, all those sort of things. And that's where we really, really need the use cases to come through. And that is my major gripe with this industry, or that even when Web3 gaming was coming up in 2021, the key problem I found was that there were more marketplaces to trade the gaming assets than there were good games itself in the industry. Or there were hardly no games. There's games you can count on a hand, and then there's 200 marketplaces to trade those assets from those games. So we need the other way around, like how it is in the web world. We need thousands of games and maybe a few hundred good games, and then you can have 20 good marketplaces. Everyone, because it was easy to build a marketplace on a public blockchain, so everyone just went and built marketplaces with no activity and no users. So that's what I think we really need, apps that people use day to day that solve problems. And the other problem I have is that Web3 solves only Web3 problems. So we need to solve problems. Go back to our first principle that, okay, what are the problems we can solve? And then see if Web3 would do that. So yeah, so that's fantastic. I have a question around whether it's with Falcon or for yourself. Do you have an ask? Are you looking whether it's to hire, to raise money, to anything? Feel free to share with the audience.
Absolutely. First off, thanks so much for the opportunity, Sam. We are hiring. Despite the market conditions, Q1 was a proven quarter for us in terms of volumes. I say that in earnest because it also shows that while there's a lot of doom and gloom being painted on the crypto as an industry, especially in the US, a lot of institutions are still engaging. They're transacting. You know, there is definitely a flight to quality. And what that means is we are looking for developers. We are looking for folks on the revenue side who can help us out on the sales and the marketing side of things. So we are hiring. And if you are in the market looking for an opportunity, because by the time Web3 isn't again, it's too late to jump on the bandwagon. Now is the time to actually get into the companies and build. And now we would be excited to have you. So you can reach out to abu@falconx.io and would love to basically have a conversation.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much. I feel like this is a really short conversation. I still have probably 10 more questions. We'll have to do this again, especially before Satoshi launches. I'd love to ask you a bit more about it. And let's introduce it to my audience and let's create some content around it to educate people. So we'd love to do this again in maybe in a few months' time.
Happy to, Sam. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening or watching this episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. By now, you know the drill. Leave a comment or share this episode with a friend and leave a review. I would love to hear from you. So that's why my DMs are open. Reach out to me, especially if you are a founder building a product in Web3. Then I would love to hear from you. What are your challenges? Is there anything that I can help you or my community can help you with? Thank you once again and wish you best of luck in building your startup or your project.